Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 110, and a happy, and I've been getting this wrong all week on Twitter, Memorial Day weekend coming up, not Labor Day. Memorial Day, of course. Happy Memorial Day weekend to you and yours. Healthy, happy, fun Memorial Day weekend, Dave, and it's good to be back together.
So that means I can, Beaters, you're getting them wrong. I can wear white until when?
Christmas. Oh, and then it's going to be a white Christmas.
Oh, okay.
That's what I say. It's a white Christmas. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Oh, okay. That's because people wear white. I got you. Yeah, I forget how all those. Look, very important time of the year with Memorial Day weekend and all. And I know probably with us getting this out a little late on a Friday, I don't know, maybe people will be able to sit around the barbecue or whatnot and take this podcast in. We got a lot to talk about, kind of, you know, I guess semi-related to Memorial Day, because we're going to talk about the national anthem a little bit during this podcast, David. But, you know, let's start first by going over what's out there as far as what did or didn't happen this past week during the Steelers' first week of OTA practices. And obviously, you know, it is, you know, like rookie mini camp and you know, until we get to training camp, we're not going to have a lot of things to report on, you know, as far as scheme or how players looked during these practices. All we can kind of go over is what's out there and what players have said and those kind of things. And I think the first and foremost, the thing that sticks out the most, the biggest thing that sticks out the most to me is it doesn't sound like the Steelers suffered any serious injuries during their first three OTA practices. Now, let me preface that with saying that even if there was an injury that was suffered, the Steelers don't have to disclose it, and the media can't disclose it unless a player or players, you know, goes, you know, reveals such information. But with that said, on top of that, I think I had two people reach out to me on Twitter today and say, and ask me why didn't Juju Smith-Schuster practice? And all I can say to that is I have not seen any pictures from the last 3 days of Juju practicing. I saw a video or two of some wide receiver drills, and I did not see Juju participating in those drills, and I have not seen any players or Juju comment on him not practicing. So everybody's guess is as good as mine. Once again, unless the player or another player or a coach comments on a player not practicing or what an injury is, then the media are not at liberty to say a player did not practice. So I'll just kind of leave it at that. You know, I'll go out on a limb and guess that it's nothing serious with Juju, that maybe if indeed he was not able to practice, it was something very minor related. And I guess until, you know, we get to next week in week two of the OTAs, if he does not practice then, and if nobody's commenting on it, maybe it's time to put on the 10-4 helmets.
Yeah, this is, you know, the kind of stuff that, you know, I'm sure people are interested in the details and, you know, how's James Conner look? How do all the draft picks look? Of course, Mason Rudolph, you know, front and center. You know, what's the relationship with Ben? You know, it's hard to get too excited about any of this. And Dave and I were talking on Twitter earlier in the week, and the best thing that happens out of these 3 weeks is that nothing happens. I mean, that's really, you don't want breaking news that Hunter Henry, you know, ran down the field by himself and tore his ACL, and you're, you know, Pro Bowl, potentially all pro tight end on a team that I think a lot of people look at the AFC West and say, you know what, the Chargers are probably the favorites coming into the season, and you lose one of your, you know, your five or seven best players in a non-contact drill on the first day of work. I mean, that's you know, look, Mike Tomlin and the staff, they have an agenda and they have a lot to accomplish. But in terms of, you know, the fan base and what, you know, what we're going to hear and what we're going to learn, that's, you know, pretty minimal stuff. And, you know, we'll get the reports and Dave's obviously, you know, grinding that stuff out and it's on Steelers.com and that kind of stuff. And but, you know, no news is good news really over the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think, you know, a couple of the talking points, you know, T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree both working on opposite sides. You know, that's a little bit newsworthy. We'll have to see how much of that carries over on into training camp and into the regular.
And Dave, let's just touch on that because I do think that's one of the interesting things. Do you think that's so that guys have flexibility to play both sides and know both positions and you can flip guys and have guys do a lot of different things? Or do you think there is a purpose and Bud Dupree is going to play the right side and T.J. Watt's going to play the left side?
Well, if there's look, I mean, for years it was always your left tackle was your best tackle, right?
Right.
But
oftentimes you'd be, you know, not always, but a lot of teams are right-handed, so strong formation to the right side.
Right. Now, in years since, I mean, if you have a weakness, if your right tackle's, you know, not as good as your left tackle, then you're going to find a ways to exploit that, right?
I mean, right. Von Miller does not have a position. J.J. Watt does not necessarily have a position. Aaron Donald moves around. They want to put him in a position where he can get after each
right,
one of those guys.
Right. You know, for years, you know, we became conditioned that, especially with the Steelers' defense, James Harrison played on the right side. Lamar Woodley played on the left side. I mean, really, you go on back for a while here. Guys had sides. Now, did James Harrison ever take snaps on the left at left outside linebacker? Sure he did, and especially very early on in his career. There weren't many. Now, did all this boil down to just one player being better on one side than another, and maybe especially against the run? I suppose. I mean, look, I mean, James Harrison was a beast against, you know, as good of a pass rusher as James Harrison was during his prime, he was just as good, if not better, as an edge setter against the run, right? And on that right side. I think in today's day and age, defenses, you better be versatile all the way around. I mean, you're, and even with cornerbacks, I mean, you got to, in my opinion, I want my best corner, following a best receiver around the field. But I mean, had the Steelers done that in the past? I mean, over the years, and the answer really to that would be no. I guess that's a long answer to your short question. And to be quite honest with you, I don't know. I'm going to sit and watch this thing play out as well. Let's put this out there, though. Bud Dupree has not been great on the left side. And for that matter, as productive as T.J. Watt was last year on the right side, how many quality sacks were in there? You know, I think it won't hurt to be able to move these guys around. And I'd be interested to see if, and make no mistake about this too, and this showed up in our charting, David, this is not new, okay? This is not a new twist, at least when it comes to these two, because they did play some on opposite sides last year. I just think that they probably want each of these guys to be a little bit more versatile, and perhaps maybe we'll see during the season these guys play on each side a little bit more than recently. But I'm going to watch this like most fans and analysts are going to watch and see how it transpires. And really, we're not going to have the answer to that question until what, week three or week four?
Yeah, you know, I've been a believer that, you know, we talk about this and different people have different views of this. And different people in the game will tell you different answers about how difficult it is to play right tackle versus left tackle or right guard versus left guard. I think the average person, and I'll put myself in this category, will tell you that if, you know, David DeCastro needs to go play left guard, he's going to be a damn good left guard, you know, almost immediately. look, on the tackle position, the way you set is different. The lineup is different. Your technique is mirrored on the other side. So, you know, if you're a good athlete and you understand your position, you understand your technique, you should be able to do those types of things. And we see now versatility on the defensive line all over the place. We see Cam and we see Tuitt. We see these guys do different things. And we've talked about, you know, the premier talented edge rushers, all of that. You should be able to play the other side and do different things. The thing that might not be as easy for you on the defensive side of the ball is, you know, what do you do in coverages? Are your reads the same? What are your keys? Those types of things. And that's why I think in the OTAs, it's a great idea to have these guys doing that stuff so that it's relatively natural for them to be on one side or the other. I think the follow-up to that is we're seeing, and this has very much blurred in the NFL over the years, the safety positions. It's, you know, we think of strong and free, or strong and weak, or free, or however you want to call them. Safety positions are hybrids that do so many different things now. You can be down in the box. You can be, you know, you can be left or right. You can be on the strong side. You can be over the tight end. And I think, you know, we talk about defining positions, and a lot of people were concerned about saying, is Sean Davis going to be, you know, is he going to go to, you know, from strong safety to free safety, kind of take Mitchell's spot? Where's Morgan Burnett going to go? I think we're going to see guys who can do all those things and you know, figure it out and move forward and have the flexibility to do those types of things.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, as you want your guys to be as position flexible as possible in today's NFL with today's speed and with today's, you know, all offensive coordinators and the analytics and the film processing. And we've heard Kevin Colbert, I think Mike Tomlin, talk about it even this offseason. You know, if they and Randy Feetner or not him, maybe Keith Butler as well, too, talk about, look, if they see you rotate one, know that they can get you to rotate one guy, a certain guy down in the box, and him not be able to cover, you know, cover out a slot well, then they're going to work towards to getting you into those type situations. So obviously, yeah, you know, and we've kind of been told this over the years, you know, how versatile the Steelers would like their strong and their freeze to be able to be, their strong and their weak side inside linebackers to be. But when push comes to shove, you usually see one of those guys play one position a little bit more than the other. So maybe there will be a little bit more of a concerted effort to be a little bit more versatile. And when it comes to these outside linebackers too, let's not forget about with these guys dropping, you know, is T.J. Watt a little bit better dropping in the coverage than say Bud Dupree is? You know, maybe that has to a little bit to do with that. But I do find it a little bit strange because, quite honestly, I mean, look, T.J. Watt really hasn't played a lot of outside linebacker during his career. Of course, switching over from tight end in college and all, but he mostly played on the right side. If you go back to Bud Dupree with his time at Kentucky and his time in the NFL so far, he's mostly played on the left side. So maybe this is just a ploy to make sure these guys are a little bit more versatile. I'll put it to you this way. I will be shocked if we're sitting here in week four of the season and Bud Dupree has logged higher percentage of snaps on the right side and T.J. Watt has logged a higher percentage of snaps on the left side. That, to me, something like that just really wouldn't add up. But, I mean, it is notable to talk about such things like that taking place early on in OTAs.
It is. And so let's just expand that one more. You know, you said I would be surprised as well. Would you be surprised if T.J. Watt didn't take 75% of his snaps? I would be surprised if, you know, those numbers weren't at least 75% on the right, currently side. On the sides they currently play.
Right, right. And looking at the back of the defense, when I'm, you know, that's where I'm saying on right side with T.J. Watt and then left side with Bud Dupree. Yeah, I mean, I would be surprised if at you know, even midway through the season, if we're looking at Bud Dupree not getting 75% of the snaps on the left side and Watt, you know, the same on the right side. Yeah, I would be surprised.
Okay. Anything else positionally that came out of you know, because I think, you know, there was a little bit of talk about scheme, but I think that, you know, that's, yeah, how guys are doing, it seems a little bit silly to talk too much about that. But I think, you know, these are semi-interesting conversations.
Yeah, look, I mean, we can play the guessing game and read in between the lines with schemes or whatnot and how these safeties are going to be used. I mean, look, Tyler Matakavich got the first team reps, you know, to start open up OTAs. That's probably not surprising, being as how John Bostic is new. But, I mean, let's be quite honest here. How surprised will you be if John Bostic is not the starter alongside Vince Williams come week one of the season? You know?
I'll be damn surprised if it's Tyler Matakavich instead of John Bostic.
Right, right. And, you know, and then we can get into the guessing game of you know, you would think that Vince, you know, if a guy's going to be out there for three downs, it's more than likely going to be John Bostic over a guy that like Vince Williams, right? I mean, Bostic is a guy that played, you know, three downs in Indianapolis. You know, you would think that the goal here in sub packages, if you're going to get an extra safety or really an extra defensive back or two defensive backs in general on the field in nickel and dime situations this year, you would think your nose tackle's coming off, and one of your inside linebackers. And I, you know, I would speculate that inside linebacker right now would be Vince Williams. And you know, as far as how Edmonds is going to be used, and Cameron Sutton, and how the safety and Morgan Burnett and all. Look, we're just going to be playing in a guessing game on this for quite a while, and you know, we think that we'll be able to pick up a little bit of that in the during the preseason as well. But I mean, are they really going to show all their cards during the preseason here? So, you know, as far as scheme goes, it's going to be a guessing game on that. But you know, I'll tell you this, I'm not expecting to see a nose tackle out on that field a lot this year. And I will be surprised if we see a guy like Vince Williams play, I don't know what, 80% of all defensive snaps this year.
You'd be surprised if he played 80. I'll be surprised if he plays 60.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, they've got to be more athletic on the field with personnel groupings that can not only play against the run, but against the pass as well. And when the opposition rolls out that 11 personnel, you got to be able to match it really on a down for down basis. And I don't know if it was you and me or me and Alex talking about this, but I mean, this year's Steelers defense is not just going to have 11 starters. There's going to be like 15 guys probably on a game-by-game basis rotating in. Now, obviously, you're going to have a good selection of those guys are going to get the majority of the snaps. But on the flip side, you know, you're probably going to see a third safety play, you know, more than 10, 12 snaps a game. You're probably going to see a guy like Mike Hilton, who like last year played a large selection of snaps, continue to do so. It's just going to be interesting to see how, and you know, Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert keep talking about how this game's getting more horizontal than vertical. Well, this is a Steelers team that got beat vertical last year, right?
They got beat vertical enough. They got beat vertical enough. That's for damn sure.
And then late in the season when Shazier got, you know, went down, they got beat horizontal and vertical.
Yeah. You know, if you're going to talk about things that, you know, if you want to find fault with the things that have been done organizationally over the last 5 years, I don't know that you need to go. Look, guys get hurt. And the severity of Ryan Shazier's injury is, you know, let's not say tragic, because he has done remarkable things and he's been an inspiration to a lot of people. And we can find some silver linings. Obviously, nobody wishes that type of stuff. There's no need to repeat that 100 times. But, you know, Ryan Shazier could have broken his arm and been out for the season. The fact that the Steelers went to their Rolodex and decided that Sean Spence was the guy. Now, look, they get a little bit unlucky that Matakevich was, you know, got injured in the same game. But the idea that Sean Spence was the guy and he was the guy they were going to roll with and that's what they were going to do. I mean, that's you know, Kevin Colbert doesn't take a lot of heat, and deservedly so. He doesn't deserve a lot of heat. But there's no excuse to roll Sean Spence out there and go with – because he's a guy you know. He didn't make it with Indy, who has an unbelievably bad defense. He can't run. You know, knowing the defense didn't help him. And they, you know, they didn't – we saw it immediately in the Ravens game. He was awful, and he was awful, you know, every game forward. And you know, that's on them. Not that's, you know, depth. Look, you got to manage your salary cap. You got to have depth. And we knew from the day Dave and I started talking in July, all the way through to the start of the season, and said, you know, it's still sketchy. And they knew it too. That's why they brought in what's his name from New England, Hightower, Dont'a Hightower. And they never did anything to kind of fill the void. And the void bit them in the ass. And you know, I won't say it was the sole reason they lost it to the Jags, but it certainly was a big part of the reason.
All right. Ryan Shazier went down early in that game against the Bengals in week 13. The Steelers still managed to go 3-1, and for practical purposes should have been 4-0 to close out the season. How would have things been different, David, had Ryan Shazier not gotten injured? I mean, look, obviously we can throw out 15 hypotheticals, as can every team around the league when it comes to injuries, if this and that. But how – now, obviously, look, I mean, what was Sean Spence and I think Alex and I talked about this in the last show too. I mean, it's still mind-boggling that we're going back and thinking that Sean Spence was the guy – off the street that ended up playing, you know, the amount of snaps that he played and this, that, and the other. How would have things been different, if any, in that game against Jacksonville in the playoffs had Ryan Shazier been healthy?
I think they win the game.
Do you really?
I do think they win the game because I think, well, look, let's say the defense, here's the thing is, you know, it was a 7-point game. The offense cost them 14. So, you know, they did a bunch of things wrong. There were a couple things surprising, and this is to your point. The defensive line got their ass whooped, and that was shocking because, you know, if you were talking about a weakness coming in, it was the Jags' ability to run the ball and their offensive line. I mean, look, we knew they couldn't throw the ball that well, and so, you know, you line up to stop the run and you make Bortles beat you. And they beat the Steelers every which way possible. I mean, it was silly.
And look, it was almost like they were lining up saying, here comes the run.
Yeah, look, we're going to – and you know what? It wasn't like – they didn't finesse them. They ran them over. I mean, they manhandled them at the line of scrimmage.
Well, I think you said ass-kicking way back then.
Right, exactly.
And I mean, yeah, the front and now, look, now Tua has since come out and said that he played last year with a torn biceps. And look, I mean, he wasn't the player he should have been last year. Now, I think it's fair to put the biceps injury on that. But there were a few other players on the ground quite a bit in that game as well, too. And, I mean, do you really think, I mean, if Shazier, I wonder how many of the listeners think that as well, too. I mean, you think if Shazier plays in that game, it's the Steelers win?
You know, no one player's a 7-point swing, but I just think the defense would be so much better with, you know, the things he can do and the versatility that he brings that, you know, maybe they don't get run over so hard, and maybe some of those passes to the backs out of the backfield, which, you know, killed them in the first half. They don't have those explosive plays.
How would the season? Okay, I'm gonna give you the win. Against
I'm not giving them a win against the Patriots in New England. No, I'm not carrying them any further than the next round.
I mean, they had the. I mean, look, I mean, you have AB another week healthier, right? I mean. And hey, look, and that's assuming AB was was off against the Jaguars.
Right, right, right. With what, like, you know, 72 catches and 1,400 yards? I mean,
they put it on. You know, they kind of put it on New England that first time around. You know, let me ask you this now. Where the team is at right now? Is this the team in OTAs? Is this a better and defense only? Let's go defense only. Is the defense better or worse than it was last year?
Day one last year?
Day one of OTAs last year versus day one of OTAs this year.
Well, let's compare it to day one, you know, season opener against the Browns, because OTAs last year, you didn't know Mike Hilton, you know, let's talk about it, you know, because, you know, hard to talk about OTAs last year because,
okay,
you know,
all right, fair enough.
Sanquez, Golson, Mike Hilton, all that stuff. So is it a better than the defense that started the season last year?
I'd say it's a push.
Look, we, you know, going into the season, we thought Cockrell would be at one corner. You know, we know what the rest of the secondary was, so that's one difference. You knew T.J. Watt was going to step in. You didn't know Harrison's role. You knew, the rest of the, you know, front seven's more or less the same. Shazier's the only guy kind of running differently there. So you would think experience helps a little bit of those guys, but, you know, the only guy Dupree and Watt are gaining experience, so that's the positive. So you've got Bostic in for Shazier. Let's just call that the trade, and that's obviously a step down. And ideally, you know, you're maybe I think at best you're right now Morgan Burnett in for Mike Mitchell. It doesn't scream, you know, big upgrade. So, you know, I think you're probably a slight downgrade from where you started the season because Ryan Shazier, we viewed. There's no question Ryan Shazier was the best athlete on defense. Now you could have an argument as to, you know, is Cam Hayward the best player? Is it Ryan Shazier? You know, was there anybody else in the conversation? Could Tua have been the guy? So if you lose your best athlete and potentially your best player on defense and the guys you've added, you know, I'd say it's not better. It's not better. It doesn't mean they can't be better, but it's not better on paper.
Let's assume Cameron Sutton picks up a lot of William Gay's snaps. Is that an upgrade, right?
Yeah. William Gay wasn't bad, but that's an upgrade. I think, you know, look, you know what would be a big upgrade? If, Artie Burns and Sean Davis were better than Artie Burns and Sean Davis, that would be a huge upgrade.
Yeah, we still don't know is Sean Davis going to be more of a versatile guy this year? I mean, is he really going to play more free safety? A position that he hasn't played a lot of, even, you know, kind of dating back to his college days. Yeah, he played it, but, I mean, yeah, good. Look, if you're going to do it, at least you're getting him the snaps back there on the back end now, right? I mean.
Yeah, you're not bringing in a guy late like Hayden. Burnett's that all the guys who are going to play are there. You know, Edmonds, I assume he's going to see the field some this year. Cam Sutton's going to see the field some this year. Hayden knows his role. Hilton's proven himself. Again, I'll make the argument that maybe Mike Hilton was the best defensive player on the Steelers last year. He didn't play as many snaps as some other guys, but, you know, his performance, certainly relative to expectations, was far and away better than anybody would have bet. So, yeah, it's, you know, Bostic's a huge wild card. He really is. You know, the one thing that I thought, the one quote that I took out of the week of OTAs, and I didn't read every quote, but the one quote I thought was most interesting and I commented on was, you know, Bostic said, look, I'm a three-down linebacker. There are not many of them in the game anymore. That's what I am. And my only answer was, we'll see. We'll see if he is.
And if he is, boy, will that ease the loss of Shazier.
Look, if he's, again.
Hey, look, he's good against the run now. Make no mistake. You know, the biggest concern with Bostic is, you know, what is a three down linebacker anymore? I mean,
right. And that's why his comment was a little bit silly, but I think his point was, I don't need to come off the field. I can play the run and I can cover.
Right. It should be I am an every down linebacker, not because you use that three down and everybody automatically goes to third down. Well, hello, people roll out 11 personnel and pass on first and 10 nowadays, right? You know, more times, obviously, than they used to be. Now, here are some interesting numbers from Pro Football Focus when it comes to Bostic last year. They have him down as allowing 41 receptions for 412 yards and three touchdowns on 51 total targets. So basically, he gave up right at 10 yards of reception and three touchdowns. And what's 41 of 51? That's like 80 something percent, right?
Yeah, right on me, like 81%. Yeah.
All right. Now here's Ryan Shazier before he went down injured last year.
82%.
Ryan Shazier allowed 43 receptions for 453 yards, a little bit more than 10 yards per reception, one touchdown on 59 total targets. So a little bit lower. What's 43 into 59 or 59 into 43? You know, what the percentage?
43 into 59, so, you know, a little bit more than two-thirds. About 70%.
So a little bit lower completion percentage than what Bostic allowed. Now look, these are also, I mean, obviously PFF. One of the drawbacks about Pro Football Focus is, you know, you need these things broken down. How many of these were zone? How many of these were man coverage? How many were definitely his responsibility? Was he just the nearest guy in coverage? You know, that's the faults of some of these, especially when it comes to Pro Football Focus and their stats and all. So it's hard to go apples to apples and oranges to oranges or oranges to apples or pears to grapes or whatever in these situations here. But the raw stats tell you that outside of the interceptions, which, by the way, Ryan Shazier had three of them, Bostic has only had one his entire career. That came way back in his rookie season, 2013, with the Bears. Make no mistake, though, the tape tells you that Ryan Shazier can do things that John Bostic cannot. Correct?
I mean, the truest thing that's ever been said.
All right, so Bostic's not going to all of a sudden be making some of those plays that Ryan Shazier has made during his time in the league, and it's silly to expect that to happen.
If you're looking for the silver lining here, is, you know, Ryan Shazier is the incredible athlete, but, you know, we talked about it. Ryan Shazier shoot gaps, you know, every Sunday he'll shoot gaps and miss tackles because, you know, he's not a guy who's going to break down and he's going to try and get him on the move. And so we see him miss a lot of tackles. He's got one arm tackles. He's going so fast. And maybe, you know, maybe Bostic makes some of those plays because he is a guy who's going to be, you know, broken down in better position to make the tackle. And instead of a 2-yard loss that turns into a 7-yard gain, it's a 1-yard gain. So, you know, one of the things you got with the explosiveness and dynamic athleticism of Ryan Shazier was some of the, you know, missed big plays.
On a down to down basis against the run, Bostic might be your better player.
That is not an unreasonable comment.
Now it goes, obviously it goes, you know, it goes a lot further than that. And, you know, some of the quotes out of Vince Williams this past week talking about how we got to be better against the run and this, that, and, you know, yes, I mean, does the defense need to be better against the run? Absolutely, it does. I mean, there were times last year, and I broke this down quite a bit too. I, you know, the biggest thing I think when it came to this, and I'll continue to think this, the biggest thing I think that hurt the Steelers last year against the run was these big damn plays. You know, just don't, you know, let them get 5 yards, but just don't let them get 25 yards. You know,
right? Overtime against the Bears, perfect example. 4 plays, 70 yards, see ya.
Right, and early and late in the game against the Jaguars in the first meeting, right? Not only the 90-yard scamper by Fournette, but, you know, when you had them, what was it, the third third quarter or what, you know, the key drive in that, in what was it, a third down or whatnot, when Fournette went off left tackle and everybody was right down there in the box, and it looked like, I guess, was it Sean Davis or Artie Burns in the wrong hole, and he gets the first down there, and that kept that drive alive, and down the field they went from there. You know, just key situations here and big moments and big plays is where this defense needs to play better against the run. Were they perfect against the run last year? Absolutely not. Did they get better? Yeah, up until Ryan Shazier went down, and then the wheels came back off again. And maybe that does play back into your comments about saying, you know, if you have Ryan Shazier on the field for that game against the Jaguars, maybe he is the difference. In that was stringing some of that stuff out, because make no mistake, we could point to about three or four plays last year in after Shazier went down that Shazier probably gets to the edge on some of those horizontal plays and makes those plays where Sean Spence does not.
No question.
And the thing is can Bostic do that, and can Bostic at least survive in passing situations, in instances where Shazier has shown that he can in the past. Make no mistake about it. The inside, and especially being as how this team didn't draft an inside linebacker, you want to talk about pins and needles right now. And I guess that kind of plays into, you know, the big news earlier this week, the Philadelphia Eagles finally parted ways with Michael Kendricks. What the hell took them so long to do that? The writing on the wall.
Hey, boy, did they screw him. I assume there's a reason for this, but waiting until the first day of OTAs when all the cap money's been sunk. You can designate him June 1st a long time ago. It didn't, you didn't have that. That wasn't the driver. What were you waiting for? The guy's been part of the team for however long, 5 years, 6 years. You won the Super Bowl. The Eagles are a good organization. Roseman is an unbelievable GM. He's done a fantastic job since Chip Kelly left of re-centering that organization. And everything they've done is right. I haven't seen – Kendricks didn't pop off about it or anything, but it just didn't seem like maybe they did the player a favor there.
We've known all the way back since March.
We've been talking about it since February.
You know, it was out there early. You know, the Eagles are, the cap situation and the young players they have behind them and what Kendricks is making. He was a prime candidate to be traded. They weren't able to get him traded by draft day. Okay, they weren't going to be able to trade him all of a sudden. I don't think. But, yeah, and I'm with you. I think he got the shaft. They could have, right after the start of the new league year, waited a couple of weeks or whatnot. All right, we're not going to be able to trade him. We can go ahead and designate him a post-June 1st cap. And to release him now and then designate him a post-June 1st cap casualty when June 1st you could throw a rock and hit June 1st.
Come on.
Why didn't you just hold on to him another week? Right?
Yeah. The reason is because, didn't want him to go to OTAs and get hurt, obviously, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can't keep him off the field. What did they give him, 2-pound weights to work with during the
voluntary?
During the voluntary portion, phase one. Let him lift some of those Nerf weights or whatnot. It was a bit curious. And, look, I wrote about Kendricks way back in March saying, hey, maybe this is a guy that the Steelers – go after, because at the time, if you remember, David, you're looking at the inside linebacker free agent market. Now, I got to admit, I think I said this way back before Bostic was signed, I was under the impression that Bostic was dealing with a knee injury that had required surgery, because there just was nothing on Bostic. And when you look down that list of inside linebacker, free agent linebackers entering the new league year, it was black. It was yuck. And then they all of a sudden, that's why I said, maybe trading for a guy like Kendricks wouldn't be you know, such a bad idea, especially when you look at what's out there. Now, you fast forward, they not long after I wrote that, they signed Bostic, and then all of a sudden we learned that, look, he missed the final two games of the last season, and really it only should have been one, and the knee injury wasn't serious, it didn't need surgery, yada, yada. Then you start putting the pieces up, you know, looking at all the pieces, you start saying, okay, well, now, you know, if I had known this, then he would have been a perfect target on the list, especially when, not that the other linebackers would trash, mind you, it's just remember what they started to come off the board for with salary wise, and you're thinking, oh Lord, look at what some of these guys are making out there, and then you look at a guy like Kendrick and you think, well, maybe that's a bargain. But all that aside, it's
so
it's understandable why Steeler fans are still clamoring. Yeah. For the team to go after Kendricks, and yeah, I get it. I would be fine if tomorrow they signed Kendricks, but the fact of the matter is, now that you have Boston get 2 years, $4 million, unless you get Kendricks for a roughly the same amount of same dollar amount, it's just not going to happen.
Right. The question is, you know, Kendricks. The thing about Kendricks, when you think about it, you know, he's not going to sign a 3-year, $15 million deal with $10 million guaranteed. He's not going to get that. So, is he going to get a 2-year, $8 million deal with you know, a $2 million signing bonus and a $3 million first-year salary? I mean, I don't – you know, I think Kendricks is going to be in demand, but I don't think he's – you know, he's not – this isn't Dont'a Hightower of last year's free agency. I mean, this is a guy who's going to get $4 million. And the Steelers can find, you know, $4 million in their back pocket if they want to. Now, the question is, you know, again – and the answer is, you know, if it's true, if you believe the reports that the Steelers wanted to trade up to get Rashawn Evans, you know, before the Titans did, and, you know, the kid from Florida State's a free agent linebacker. I mean, they weren't breaking down the door to draft him, and nobody else was either. So, you know, he's a bit of a lottery ticket. You can't assume he's going to be Vontaze Burfict on the good side, not the bad side of Vontaze Burfict. He's already shown that he might have a little of the bad side of Vontaze Burfict in him. So the Steelers obviously recognize that they don't have the depth that they need. So you wonder, you know, do you find this money and pay it to him, even though it puts you maybe, you know, maybe you got to restructure somebody else and maybe that doesn't affect your overall cap space. But it is the question, or and this, it's very reasonable, maybe the Steelers scouts, Kevin, and whomever is taking a look, they looked at the tape and said, you know what? The Eagles saw this 2 years ago when they cut his snaps back, and his snaps ended up increasing because somebody got hurt. Same thing last year. This is a guy who he's not going to find the field for us for 30% of the – more than 30% of the snaps. It's not worth it. And that's a totally plausible answer coming out of Steelers headquarters. We don't know that that's the answer, but it certainly could be.
Look, is this a can't-miss guy? No. But, I mean, has he put some good things down on tape the last couple of years? Absolutely. He's been a fairly healthy guy as well, too, the last couple of seasons. I think he's missed just a couple of games, I think, hamstring and quad. I think he's missed two games over the course of the last 2 years with those kind of injuries here. Here's the thing. He was set to earn, what, almost $6 million this year? I bet he's wanting that in 2018 money via a base salary and a signing bonus or something close to it. Will he get $6 million in his bank account in 2018? And, you know, it's kind of questionable for sure. I mean, he's obviously – here we are the end of the first week and he's still out there on the street. That's probably not surprising being as how teams are looking at what they have right now in OTAs. After OTAs get over, then teams will do the reevaluating and say, all right, and look at their injury situation as well, and then say, okay, well we need to look. And I don't think he should be jumping at any 1 year, $2 million offer, 2 year, $4 million offer right now either. Now, will he ultimately have to play for that? Well, I mean, that's to me, that's going to be the kind of the bottom figure. But the longer this thing goes on, there are going to be more injuries in the first couple weeks of June. You can count on it. His price tag might actually go up the longer he stays unemployed here. But back to the Steelers here. Could they afford Kendricks right now? Absolutely they can. And the Nomer people will just want to look at something and say, well, they only have $5.5 million in cap space. That's not enough. if you sign a guy longer than 1 year, I mean, look, we've seen this. We saw it this year with Burnett. We see it this year with Bostic. Look, you can make that first year cap hit pretty damn low and still give a player some money. Okay, so if you want the player bad enough right now, you can make it work. All right, and the same with Kendrick. Even at, look, if you gave Kendrick's a 2 year, I don't know, $9 million contract,
$8 million deal. That's what I give him with, you know, if you're going to pay him, I think that's it. You know, like I said, you give him a, you know, a $3 million signing bonus. You give him a, you know, I don't know, $1.5 million first year salary and a whatever's left over.
I mean, you can make it work. All right, because
no problem.
The question is, you know, and look, you're not going to pay Kendrick that kind of money for him to be a backup, though. So, you know, now Bostic, technically with what Bostic's earning, and it's probably, you know, it wouldn't be surprising. Well, it would be very surprising now that they didn't draft a guy. But, I mean, heading into the draft, had the Steelers drafted, let's say, a Rashawn Evans, it was plausible at the time that Evans or any young linebacker drafted early could overtake Bostic during the season, correct?
Sorry, one more time?
Had the Steelers drafted a guy like Rashawn Evans
Vander Esch or
whoever, it's obviously plausible that come the midpoint of the season and on, that player would bypass Bostic.
I would assume that would happen, yeah. In fact, possibly by day one, but yeah, I would. I think everybody would be disappointed if not. Maybe it would be Vince Williams, but be starting for one of the two guys.
Right. Exactly. Now, with Bostic's 2 year, $4 million salary, you can get away with him being a backup and a special teams guy, and wouldn't be a bad backup or special teams guy to have on top of it. Should you get to that? Now the question becomes with Kendricks, if you signed him right now, you're bringing him in to start, and people can say, well, move Bostic over to the strong side and let Kendricks be your run and chase guy. Hey, I get it. You know, you wouldn't hurt my feelings if that ended up happening, but it's just. I would be shocked if it does happen. Now, I think that the Steelers are happy with what they have, and boy, they sure have been singing, or Kevin Colbert's been singing the praises of Tyler. Let me ask you this: you know, that's got to be my catchphrase over the 8-9 years of this show. Is let me ask you this.
Let me tell you this.
Let me tell you this. We talked about Ryan Shazier had he stayed healthy and all. If Tyler Matakevich is healthy and is your starting linebacker alongside Vince Williams the rest of the run last year, do they beat the Jaguars?
No, I know, you know. I like Tyler Matakevich as a special teams guy. I don't, you know. I was all for the guy making the roster out of his. But you know, it's the whole question of these are always the interesting conversations if you're in a draft room. When you get to the back of the draft, college productivity versus athleticism, we talk about it. The guy's the Butkus Award winner in college because he's a tremendously productive linebacker at Temple. He's making 15 tackles a game. He's running all over the field. But he's not an elite athlete, and the level of the NFL is, you know, almost exclusively elite athletes. Very few non-elite athletes are, you know, end up being great players.
Yeah, now look, do I want this guy? Do I want Matakevich on the 2018 Steelers? You're damn right I do. I want him on special teams. And look, I mean, you know, I don't think he's a – I think he could function as a backup strong side inside linebacker for sure. I have no issue with that. I'm not trying to run this guy out of town. I've said this from day one, but I think he does have his limitations for sure. That's why, you know, we said at the top of the show, be absolutely shocked if Bostic's not the starter alongside Vince Williams moving forward. But God forbid, I mean, is this defense right now? And you could obviously go around the league right now, David, and point to inside linebackers and defense and all like that. I mean, if Bostic goes down right now with some sort of injury, what the heck's going to happen then?
Yeah, they're calling Michael Kendricks.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, look, again, they're exposed. I mean, they, you know, who knows again what kind of the UDFAs and the kid who was a, you know, they brought in from Florida, what was it, Miami or Florida? I can't even remember. Florida State, Miami, wherever
yeah,
he was.
Yeah, Florida State, Thomas.
Matthew, yeah Thomas, Thomas, right. So, you know, who knows what they see or have seen or, you know, have any view on, but they're exposed. You go in and that's your backup linebacker and start the season, you've got a problem. Now, guys are going to get cut from here to there, and guys who are, you know, known, guys who are known, and guys who are unknown. And again, Steelers have to do a better job of identifying the guys if that happens in season, who they can turn to, because Sean Spence was a disaster. No two ways about it.
Right. All right. Other things that stuck out, kind of at OTAs.
I mean, just the one thing about Vince talking about the running game. Look, you want to be able to stop the running game. I'm not dismissing, you know, being better against stopping the run. But let's just be very clear. The Jaguars had the best defense in the NFL last year, and they ranked 27th stopping the run because they were so damn good against the pass. So, you know, if you were going to pick and choose, stop one or the other, you want to be able to stop the pass. You know, the Steelers were reasonably good. You know, this is, again, you know, you hope numbers aren't deceiving, but numbers can be a little deceiving because the Steelers in games where they got ahead, certainly big offensively, you force other teams to pass, so you don't have to stop the run much and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the Steelers run defense, even though it graded, you know, I think in the top 11, I think, if I remember correctly, it wasn't very good. Their pass defense was, you know, It grades out okay. The Steelers had possession a lot, but they gave up way too many big plays. You know, I think the defense overall was a, you know, we talked a lot during the season. It was this is what you don't hope for. It was way better in the first half of the season than it was in the second half. Now Hayden got hurt, Shazier got hurt. You know, there's some reasons for that, but they were not an improving unit. That's for sure.
Yeah, if it wasn't the damn big plays, it was the big plays being allowed to get into the end zone on top of it. I mean, that you know, how many times we talk about just not getting the opportunity to defend those final blades of grass and prevent them from getting in the end zone, maybe settling for a field goal and the big plays that they gave up in the running game, especially early on in the season, really kind of skewed those numbers. Here's the thing about the run. You want to be able to stop the run so you can get the opposition in predictable down and distance situations where you know they're going to pass. That way you can better match up against them in those situations. So that's where being able to stop the run comes in huge. If you stop it, if a team runs on you on first and 10 and gains 1 or 2 yards, guess what they're going to do on second down?
Yeah, they're not running on you.
They're not running on you. And then thus you can get your lighter personnel out there and kind of match up and have things and send your guys off the edge. And the same with third down. You know, if you get a team in third and you know, 6 or 7, it's going to make that quarterback hold the ball a little bit longer because they're going to have to go for the chains. Third and 3, you know, if a team's able to run on you for 3 yards on first and second down back to back, you know, it might not sound like a big deal, but third and 4 is a lot different than 3rd and 7. All right, I mean, I know that's obvious from a math situation, but it is a lot different when it comes to a quarterback having to hold that ball for, you know, an extra second there. And that's where stopping the run comes in huge. So, yeah, I mean, we have seen some teams that may have given up higher yards per carry averages than teams that have finished better or Super Bowl or whatnot have during the regular season. But I bet if you go back through those, you find, you know, remove explosive plays and those kind of things. Those teams, you know, that may have given up a higher yards per carry average probably didn't give up the chunks that the other.
Right. I think that's right.
The other team as well, too. So, yeah, you want to stop the run, but, damn, this is a passing league, man. That's why there's so much focus on – that's why 5 quarterbacks were taken in the first round this year, right?
That's it, baby. That is it.
All right, one other thing. James Conner, boy, good, you know, five months removed from knee surgery. He's back out there running around, looks a little bit lighter, looks you know, pretty trim out there as well, too. I don't think, Matt Filer, there's a report of Matt Filer getting some work in as center. David, is Gerald Hawkins going to make this 53 this year?
All of a sudden, you know, a guy who you think is going to be, you know, challenging, you know, a year ago, you think maybe he's going to challenge Villanueva or be the heir apparent to Marcus Gilbert. He's behind Okorafor, and you know, so you know, he's going to have to work to make this roster. He's going to have to show versatility. He's going to have to be able to play both guard and tackle. I would say right now it's 50-50 at best for him.
So you're saying, I mean, you remember Todd Haley, right, not long after Hawkins was drafted, talked about, and Alex and I talked about this the other day, there was that guard comment in there. I want to see if Hawkins can play some guard, because I damn sure know Matt Filer can. I know Filer can play a little bit of tackle, too, and if he's learning that center position as well, too, maybe Filer has the upper hand on Hawkins, and Chooks is not going to get cut as a third round draft pick this year. So barring any injuries happening, Lord, these things, here's to hoping that doesn't happen. These things have a funny way sometimes of working themselves out in the long run come September. But right now, man, you have to really wonder if Hawkins might not be, you know, he better show a lot of versatility moving forward. So I found that interesting that Filer's getting a little bit of work at center. Maybe he's the new Chris Hubbard moving forward there as well, too. So I found that a little bit interesting. Here we are, 55 minutes into this thing, and we haven't I figured we would have got to it by now. But, David, I think I have been to, and I haven't been to many of them, I think I've been to homeowners associating meetings probably run better than the NFL owners meeting in Atlanta was this past week.
So let me propose something. We're 55 minutes in. It's Memorial Day weekend. Why don't we table it? I think we had a surprisingly good football discussion for going into the Memorial Day weekend. And why don't we come back and tackle that after the holiday, because we're not going to get any news over the weekend. And we'll it doesn't deserve 5 minutes. It deserves more than that. And, you know, we got a good hour in.
I mean, I'm liable to forget everything. I did get it. Did you see my engaging conversation?
I did. You and Ramon like went after it for a while. Yeah,
with Ramon. I felt like a dog chasing my tail. We'll get into all that. All right. Well, I guess what you just did is called a tease. Is that what?
Yeah. I called a happy hotline. You know, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, and it's damn near 5 o'clock here now. So.
Yeah, like back when I drank, it was always beer 30 somewhere.
You know, we don't get too many of these in the afternoon. This is a rare occasion. So you know, yeah, we're pushing into the holiday weekend.
All right. Well, after all that, then here's hoping to me being able to keep a conscious stream of thoughts on this national anthem thing until either Monday or Tuesday of next week. So we promised to get to that right away. We'll preview the week two of the OTAs and recap any other maybe tidbits that have come out of week one of the OTAs. So I guess with that, in the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Let us know, is that game against the Jaguars in the playoff turn out any differently if Ryan Shazier is healthy and participating in that? It'd be interesting to get some the listenership thoughts on that as well. If you want to donate to the show, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button in the upper right navigational bar, and man, we actually talked about some football today. Have a good weekend, David.
Yeah, have a great holiday weekend to all our listeners, and as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.